a new bill on adoption, fostering, and family law in Ontario.
A child may be considered in need of protection, Children's Aid Society intervention, if the child is suffering mental or emotional harm or is at risk of mental or emotional harm. And so you can imagine a situation where, say, a child's teacher suspects that a child is gender questioning or something and they're not being supported in that. A teacher would actually have a duty to report certain things to a Children's Aid Society, who would look into it further.
On the feature today, ARPA lawyer John Sikkema with an analysis of the Wynne government's Bill 89. In the news, a look back at the just-completed Stop Censorship Tour. Quebec tries to impose religious neutrality on daycare centers. And a look ahead at Donald Trump's upcoming U.S. Supreme Court appointment.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
We need a law. ARPA's pro-life arm has just wrapped up a 9-city tour of Ontario. Director Mike Schutten says each stop featured two presentations on the issue of censorship of abortion statistics in that province.
The Ontario government's censorship provisions in the FIPPA Act, the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act, which says that this act does not apply to anything dealing with abortion services in the province of Ontario. So at each event, John Sikkema, ARPA's legal counsel, and I are both presenting, and from quite different perspectives. So I'm presenting as obviously the director of the We Need a Law campaign, and how from a grassroots as well as a policy perspective, it's really challenging to have a conversation, first of all, with the residents of Ontario, but also with the government of Ontario, when the facts aren't out in the open. And then John is speaking specifically about the court case that we've brought before the Ontario Superior Court, and he's talking about the hundreds of hours that he's put into litigation and why we think we do have a chance.
I spoke with Mike about midway through the tour. He says there were a couple of interesting takeaways from the presentations.
One is that most people have not heard about this. They're not aware that this is going on. And the other demographic that is not aware that this is going on is politicians themselves. We had one event where there were two persons running for the candidacy of the PC party here in Ontario, and they had no idea that this was going on. So one of the takeaways is very encouraging that people are not only learning about this, but they're also given tools as to how they can help change this. The other interesting takeaway is that we're organizing these events through the local Right to Life groups. So whether that be Halton Alive or Hamilton Right to Life, we're organizing it through them. And many people at each event have not really heard of the work of ARPA Canada or We Need a Law. So we're creating new relationships with these people, and we see that as an exciting way to really grow our grassroots here in the province of Ontario.
The tour's final stop was last night in Windsor. In Quebec, the provincial government has introduced a new law governing religious expression in that province, Bill 62. It's called the Religious Neutrality Act. Among other things, it tries to ban religious instructions of any kind in private daycare centers, be they Christian, Muslim, or Jewish. The Christian Legal Fellowship has written a brief to the National Assembly objecting to some of the central tenets of that bill.
We're concerned with how state neutrality seems to be misunderstood in the legislation. The Supreme Court of Canada has said that the state's duty to remain neutral in matters of religion means that it must neither favor nor hinder any particular belief. And it's that latter part that we feel is missing in this particular legislation. Being neutral doesn't mean that you must hinder particular religious beliefs. It's the opposite. It means that you cannot hinder religious beliefs. And one of our concerns is that the bill does seem to do that in the name of state neutrality. It seems to hinder the expression of religious beliefs in a number of areas, and particularly in the context of child care.
The CLF's Derek Ross says the bill goes beyond just child care as well by seeking to ban certain types of religious expression, the wearing of Muslim headscarves, for example.
It does address issues like face coverings, and we have concerns about those as well, and just the overall tone of the bill as it pertains to religious expression. What we stated in our submission and what courts have held is that when the state is going to adopt laws, it must do so in the context of making room for diverse communities to hold and act on their beliefs.
On the issue of religious instruction in daycares, Ross says the government is way out of line.
What the bill says is that subsidized educational child care services, and we understand that to include subsidized faith-based child care, home-based child care programs, they must not teach children a specific religious belief, dogma, or practice. So this bill is effectively imposing a requirement of non-belief on faith-based child care centers, which in our view is contrary to the charter and contrary to what the Supreme Court has held in the Loyola decision.
A full copy of the Christian Legal Fellowship submission is available on their website. We link to it from the Lighthouse News homepage this week. And finally, some American politics. A lot of Canadians will be watching with interest when Donald Trump gets sworn in as the 45th president of the United States this coming Friday. One of the issues that Canadian Christians will be watching is what he does with the United States Supreme Court. There's a vacancy on the court right now, and Trump talked about filling that vacancy last week at his first formal press conference since the election. He said his nominee will likely be named before the end of this month.
As you know, I have a list of 20. I've gone through them. We've met with numerous candidates. They're outstanding in every case. They were largely recommended and highly recommended by Federalist Society. I'll be making the decision on who we will put up for Justice of the United States Supreme Court, a replacement for the great, great Justice Scalia. That will be probably within 2 weeks of the 20th. And it'll be a decision which I very strongly believe in. I think it's one of the reasons I got elected. I think the people of this country did not want to see what was happening with the Supreme Court. So I think it was a very, very big decision as to why I was elected.
You heard Mr. Trump refer to the Federalist Society as a group that's helped him put a list of names together. On its website, the Federalist Society describes itself, and I'm quoting here, as a group of conservatives and libertarians interested in the current state of the legal order. It is founded on the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. End quote. Back with more after this.
Attention all students in grades 11 and 12. Do you attend a Reformed church in Canada? Are you interested in making a difference in our country? Have we got an opportunity for you? Apply to attend God and Government Youth 2017 this May in Ottawa. You will spend 3 days with other students learning about current issues and taking part in the political process. Applications are due February 9th. Visit arpacanada.ca for more details and to apply today.
And we're back on the program. The guest this week for the feature edition is ARPA lawyer John Sikkema. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Al.
The Ontario government has introduced a new law. It's called Bill 89, and it talks about fostering and adoption. Talk to me, first of all, about what the bill is and how it regulates this stuff.
Bill 89 would repeal the Child and Family Services Act completely and then replace it. And that is the legislation that governs child protection services, foster care services, adoption services, who's licensed to provide adoption services, and all of that. Since it replaced the whole act, it's a pretty long bill. Some of what it does is just change language here or there. So, for example, the term that a child is a ward of the state when the child goes into state care, that term is removed. Instead, children are just in the care of the state. That's the kind of softer language used. When referring to Aboriginal children, it removes terms like Indian and replaces it with more proper terms like Métis or the appropriate terms there. So some of that is less concerning. More substantive changes to how we interpret the best interests of children, which is kind of the governing purpose of the whole act.
There are some problems with this bill. Outline some of those for us. What are the issues that you see that need to be addressed here?
We've got a few things here. One is that the bill adds gender identity and gender expression into what's considered in the best interests of the child. So that's something that may be operative in the system already that Children's Aid Societies are concerned about, but this is putting it right into the law that in all these services, a child's gender identity and gender expression need to be accounted for in how services are provided. So that's one thing. Another is that the bill actually removes the religious faith in which a child is being raised as a matter that's to be considered. That used to be kind of a standalone matter that the child's religious faith should be accounted for in how services are provided. That's cut, and then we just have creed in the whole long list of things that include race and gender identity and gender expression.
There's also some implications for parental rights in terms of what the Children's Aid Society can do.
Yes. One thing that Bill 89 does, it signals a shift towards a greater readiness for Children's Aid Societies to intervene. So the current law says, with regard to Children's Aid Societies, that they should always take the least disruptive course of action that's available to them. What Bill 89 does is it adds something to that. So it keeps the least disruptive course of action phrase, but then adds including the provision of prevention services. And that, you know, we never have language added for no reason. Courts will always see a purpose in the legislature adding language. And this, to me, implies that intervention, Children's Aid Society intervention, should not be presumed to be more disruptive than non-intervention. And intervention is necessary for a number of reasons in this law. A child may be considered in need of protection, Children's Aid Society intervention, if the child is suffering mental or emotional harm or is at risk of mental or emotional harm. And if parents are not providing treatment or access to proper treatment for a child who's considered to be suffering from that kind of emotional harm, then Children's Aid Societies are supposed to investigate and possibly intervene. And so you can imagine a situation where, say, a child's teacher suspects that a child is gender questioning or something and they're not being supported in that. A teacher would actually have a duty to report certain things to a Children's Aid Society who would look into it further. So these things together, taken together, kind of signal that intervening may not be considered more disruptive than not intervening, together with some of the things that are added, like gender identity, to this law. We may be seeing a shift towards essentially enforcing gender ideology in families.
There's some other problems as well in terms of who can and can't foster and adopt. Talk to me about that.
Just the fact that this bill adds gender identity, gender expression into the mix of things that have to be taken into account, it could mean that parents who don't affirm that line of thinking, that gender varies independent of sex, that placing a child with such parents would be considered not to be in a child's best interest. And not just for gender questioning children. In the eyes of the law, of course, every child would have a gender identity that may be considered, you know, cisgender, the term if the child is a boy who identifies as a boy. But in the eyes of the law, gender identity is a real thing. Now, how exactly that will play out is difficult to know. The law does say that the minister accountable for this bill can pass regulations. Those don't have to be voted on in the legislature. Can have regulations that will govern how gender identity and gender expression are to be accounted for. So kind of the practical details will be worked out in regulation that the minister can adopt.
What are the sort of political realities surrounding this? You know, Patrick Brown essentially prevented any of his caucus members who were opposed to Bill 28 from showing up for that vote. Any indication we're going to be faced with a similar situation on this one, or is it too early to tell?
I think it is a bit early to tell. One of the nice things here is, unlike Bill 28, we have a bit more time. So this was introduced in December, just before the legislature took a break, and they won't be back in session until late February. So that gives us a bit of time to contact MPPs, find out what their positions are, and hopefully tease out a sense of where the other parties could go on this. It is a government bill, and the government, of course, has a majority, so that does make it seem likely to pass. But we hope to find out soon what the reaction to this bill will be from our elected representatives.
Do we know, in terms of process, will there be committee hearings, for example, or is this going to be rushed through the way Bill 28 was?
That's also difficult to know. I mean, a committee will review the bill. Whether or not they actually have witnesses appear before that committee is another question that will depend on what the committee decides to do.
ARPA's got some easy mails on this. Talk to me a little bit about the basics of what we're trying to say in that campaign.
For now, we're just inviting people to check out our easy mail and send one or all, and to follow up for a response if they don't get one. One of those easy mail messages talks about how Bill 89 undermines parental authority, which we've talked about a little bit. Another talks about how Bill 89 jeopardizes foster and adoptive families and children. I mean, a lot of religious families provide foster services and adoption as well. And we essentially want to ask the government if they're trying to stop those families from being involved in this. You know, that's not good for the families, and it's not good for the children who need foster services, and some of them who need adoptive homes. And finally, we have a message that talks more specifically about how Bill 89 treats religion. It seems to see a child's religious upbringing as less important, while adding a whole list of factors that you might find in a human rights bill, including gender ideology. and whether or not that's appropriate in the child services context. So those are kind of the three drafts that we've got up there for people to edit as they like, as always, and send as soon as possible so that we've got time to get responses from our MPPs before this returns to the legislature.
John, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Al.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.